Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 117, entitled How to Be a High Status Man, I chat with Jason Capital. Jason is known as America's Honest Success Coach, and he shares with us his best tips for becoming a high status man and cultivating the life that all men want. He dives into many topics including social status, body language, state of mind, building rapport, and many other fascinating high status triggers. If you're wondering how you can become a high status man today and live the life you've always wanted, check this episode out now. You guys are going to love it. Gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? If not, check your pulse right now because there is something seriously wrong with you. I say this all the time, guys, but seriously, the Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the number one community for connecting with men, connecting with great men. We've had thousands of guys now join the group and share ideas every single day on becoming the elite and best men we can be. So join the group right now by going to elitemanmastermind.com. If for some reason you haven't joined yet and request to join the group, it is a private group, which means you do have to request, but I will add you in within just a few hours after your request. Trust me, you are going to love this group and absolutely love being a part of the Elite Man Mastermind. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Jason Capital from highstatusbook.com. He just released his book, High Status, a couple weeks back, depending on when this goes live. But Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely, man. Glad to be here.
Yeah, dude, I've been a fan of your work for a number of years, and, you know, obviously, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with some of the things you do, but just for anyone who doesn't know what you do, can you just kind of quickly, for 30 to 60 seconds, talk about what it is you do?
Sure. So today, a lot of people call me America's Honest Success Coach. What I do, in short, is I help people become high status and then basically get the life of their dreams. A lot of us, I think, in life, we end up living or, you know, by choice or not by choice, maybe it's unconscious, but we end up getting stuck in this pattern of just living this life that's very average and very routine and very predictable. And it's hard to realize when you're in it until it's too late a lot of times. And then, you know, you wake up one day at 25 or 30 or 35 or 40 and you're like, what the fuck did I just do? I didn't do any of the things I told myself I was going to do when I was younger, when I was in college, when I was a kid. So what I do is the second thing after someone becomes high status that I work with is I want to help you get the life that you knew you were always meant to live, whether that means private jets and penthouses or whether that means, you know, running a surf shop on the beach in Bali. Whatever it is that you really want to do, because I don't believe anyone on this planet was born to be a cubicle man or a cubicle woman. I want to save you from that. And I want to show you that there's a much better way that you can kind of drink from the source of life. So that's what I do now. A lot of people might know in the past, I was a dating coach starting when I was 20 years old. By the time I was 25, I was named the number one dating coach in the world. And there was something I discovered when I was doing all that dating coaching called status and higher status. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But that is something that has greatly influenced what I do and what I talk about and the people I work with today.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. That's kind of where I knew you from, too. I heard you over the years, I think on like YouTube or just from talking to guys like John Romanello or Craig Ballantyne, some of my friends. I mean, they speak so highly of you, dude. And I think it's just kind of your raw, genuine style, like the way you talk and the way you kind of present things. Like the YouTube videos I saw, they're very authentic. And I think that's what resonates with a lot of guys. But does that kind of, has that always been like your style or way of doing things, just being like real and honest? Or because was it something you had to kind of work into?
This is an excellent question. So the short answer is no, not at all. When I was first starting, so when I was 20 years old, I had from being a little kid to 20, all I did was play basketball. It was my dream to play in the NBA. I was obsessed with Steve Nash, so much so that when I was 16 years old, I emailed his high school basketball coach just to find out what drills they would do when Steve was in high school so I could do the same drills. I was totally obsessed.
Did he email you back?
and his name was Ian Hydeley, and he emailed me back from British Columbia, actually, wow. Which was amazing. Yeah, it was great. So because of my obsession with basketball, there was one part of my life that I completely ignored, which none of my friends did, which was girls, you know, the opposite sex. So at 20, I'm not playing basketball anymore. I'm at school. All my friends are going to these parties. They're meeting girls. They're being social. They're having fun. And I'm spending Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night just alone, locked in my dorm room or my apartment because I'm afraid of girls. I'm afraid of putting myself out there. I just avoided it completely. It scared me. What you're talking about, being free-flowing, being real, being authentic with another human being or in front of thousands of people like on YouTube or on a stage, that scared the shit out of me when I was younger. And it was something that I knew I needed to work on. I remember I went to a frat party with my friends when I was 20. We walk in and I'm with three other friends, and in 5 minutes, all three of them have a girl. They're all just like, you know, they're all flirting. They're having fun. One guy's breathing fire out of his mouth. Another one is like picking up a girl and throwing her over his shoulder, and everyone's giggling and laughing. And I'm talking to this one girl, and within 2 minutes, I get the, you know, it was really nice meeting you, but I need to like go find a friend or, you know, floss my cat's teeth or do something to end this conversation as soon as possible. And just seeing like that subtle, it wasn't a hardcore rejection, right? Just a subtle rejection, a polite rejection. It felt like a dagger to the heart. It was enough for me that I stormed back to my apartment, and I'm like, I will become the king of dating at some point. And I go through this whole period of studying all the psychology textbooks and traveling the world to meet with mentors and people who are the best in the world, whether it's a seduction or whether it's psychology or influence or persuasion or just human communication, verbal and nonverbal. And I'm studying all of it. And there was one thing that was so pervasively effective in all of those areas. And it was this idea of what you're talking about, which is being free flowing, right? The ability to just it's not that you don't give a shit, right? Some people are like, I don't give a fuck, and I just say whatever, but it can come off as obnoxious, right? It's this ability to be free-flowing and be real and be authentic, but while also having this emotional acuity to what the other person is going through and their struggles and what they're feeling, and just recognizing that, hey, there is another person on the other end that you're talking to. And when you can find that balance between being free-flowing but also being empathetic to the other person, I think you have a really attractive individual. And ironically, I call it giving truth. Right. We call it high status truth. It's one of the 12 honest signals of higher status that I teach to all my clients and all my students and customers. But that's what it is.
Yeah, no, totally makes sense, dude. So how long did it actually take you to really get that skill down, that, you know, skill of being yourself, being authentic, yeah, being raw, real, but also having that emotional acuity that you mentioned where you can kind of figure out like the different situations and be better socially with people?
Absolutely. So one thing that I've realized over the years is there's this quote that Einstein said that comes back to me a lot, which was that for us to solve a problem, we cannot solve it at the same level that the problem was created, right? And a lot of times people who they don't say what they want, they're not authentic, they're not real because they're thinking too much, right? They're too much in their head, they're not in their body. So it's a thinking problem. And a lot of people try to solve this thinking problem by thinking it through, or by having more thoughts about it, which is trying to solve the problem at the same level that it was created. If we're going to solve this problem of you overthink it too much and you're not just free flowing, you're not just authentic, you can't just be present and real with other people, if that's a thinking problem, we have to solve it with the body, right? We have to solve it in the other way. And I didn't know this quote or this kind of high level problem solving thing when I was younger. I was just fortunate to stumble upon a really quick solution, which I'll share with you right now. So what I did, when I was 20 years old at Michigan State University, my fourth college in 4 years, I would be walking to class, knowing that in class I was going to be sitting next to other girls or other people, knowing that that's a situation where I want to be free-flowing. I want to be able to connect to people. I want to not really care so much about what other people think. And what I would do is on the way to class, knowing it's like, say, a 10-minute walk, I would do this thing that I still to this day do. I call it shaking the shit out. But I would trudging through the snow with my backpack on. I would just literally, if we had a video, I could show it to you, but I would just, it'd be like almost, if someone was watching me, it looked like I was having a seizure. I would just physically like jump and shake and just like make weird noises like that. But I'd do it for 10 or 15 seconds in plain sight of anyone nearby. And what would happen is I would do it and it'd be so, obviously I'm so embarrassed. I'm like making a fool of myself. What do these people think? But then I would actually do it and it would change my physiology and I'd be in a better state than I was 10 seconds before. A little more excited, a little happier, a little more free. But at the same time, every time I did it, I remember I would like say to myself, I'd be like, wait, so I just did something really embarrassing just now and no one said anything and I didn't die. I'm still alive. So it would cemented this new belief in me that, you know what, I can just do crazy shit and I'm not going to die. Like that was the worst that could happen. That's not going to happen. And then I'd get to class. I'd be in this great state. It'd be really fresh in my mind that I can be free. I can just do weird, crazy things. I can be real. I can be authentic. I can express myself and no one's going to judge me. They like me more because I'm so real. People are actually attracted to that. So that was how I did it. And it literally only took a couple weeks of just seizing on the way to class before everything kind of shifted for me permanently.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. And, you know, I think a lot of the guys that kind of went through the whole dating experience can connect to that as well. For me, it was doing things like signing up for a dance class where I was the only guy and there was 30 women in the class and I'm a horrible dancer. So I would just literally every single class be nervous as shit before the class started. But, after getting through it and going through the motions and just acting like a complete idiot, looking like a complete idiot in front of all these women, but they kind of like, you know, cheer you on and take you and kind of help you out. At the end of the class, you feel like a new man or you feel like you can do anything. So for me, I had the problem with dating after doing this kind of crazy thing, you know, talking to girls, going up and approaching women and starting a conversation with women. It was like nothing. It was second nature because I had kind of done something that was so scary. And I think it's something, you know, very similar here.
Yeah, actually, I'm curious. I don't mean to flip it on you, but by you doing that, which, by the way, is much more strategic than what I did. I think it's a little bit smarter what you were doing. What would you say is the biggest lesson that you got out of that that had carried over not just women but like the rest of your life?
The confidence I have today and, you know, after that point that I can do anything socially has stuck with me. So that was the biggest social fear I had. It was that and actually an acting class that I did right after that, which is just as friggin', you know, scary in my opinion. Both of those things combined, they gave me the confidence that I could do anything. I could literally do anything I wanted to when it came to social conditioning, when it came to social pressure, when it came to now I give speeches going up in front of 300 guys and talking to them and giving a, you know, hour-long presentation. I can do all that stuff, and I don't even get nervous doing that stuff, you know, and I'm a diehard introvert by nature and you know, was formerly a very shy guy, very quiet guy, but I can do all that stuff now because I've conditioned myself to do doing stuff like this.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's terrific. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, that concept, I think, applies, and, you know, I talk about that frequently on the show, and, you know, I just kind of love everything about pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, doing things that scare the hell out of you. But kind of going back to what you mentioned earlier, the high status concept, what does it actually mean to be a high status individual? I mean, is it something like kind of, is it social status kind of thing, or is it something a little bit different?
Yeah, so it's, you know what, it's a combination of several different things, social status being one of them. Like, we were actually talking before this podcast, that Dr. David Buss, who's this incredible scientist, he's a professor of psychology at the University of Texas, and he spoke at one of my events last year. I bought a copy of his book, Evolution of Desire, and gave it away to the 425 people there, because I think it's such a good book. But the thing he talks about in there is that the thing that attracts females to males more than anything else is social status, right? But he also goes deeper into this book, and he poses this question at the end of this social status section, kind of, where he goes, now, what we don't know or what we've seen in some studies is that guys who don't have social status, but they exhibit or express the same type of behaviors that you know, kings or politicians or world leaders already express, they get the same results as those other people when it comes to attraction and when it comes to life success. And that is exactly what my real world experience and coaching clients and kind of being on the ground floor for the last 8 years and in the trenches has taught me. What I found when I mean, you know, when I was 21 years old and I'm going to bars, for, you know, for the first time and learning that new environment and learning how to operate and how to succeed there, I went in there at first thinking I needed pickup lines and I needed routines and I needed to write scripts and I needed to do all these things to attract the kind of girls that I wanted. And what I noticed is it worked for some girls, but it didn't work for like the top girls, let's say. Right. And I would look at the guys who were actually succeeding with those girls, the girls that every other guy wanted. And I noticed that they didn't have scripts. They didn't have lines. They didn't have any of that shit. What they did all have in common was those same kind of high status behaviors, those high status signals. And over the last 8 years, I've made it a science to reverse engineer what those things are and how to install them into anyone in a really short amount of time. So anyone in a, you know, really quickly can actually start to get those same results that the top men and the top women in the world have. And just in my own experience, you know, when I figured that out kind of thing, and I spent, you know, a few weeks just kind of, instead of the scripts and the routines, I started just modeling their behavior. So their eye contact, the way they walk, the way that they talked, their kind of charisma, the way that they were kind of carefree, their style, just kind of how they carried themselves, right? How they looked, how they sounded, how they acted. And within a couple of weeks, I all of a sudden was getting and attracting those girls that had eluded me for so long. And pretty soon when I was at Michigan State, I had those same guys who I'd been studying a couple months before actually started coming to me with questions about girls and dating and success. And I started teaching them what I literally had stolen from them. They don't know this, so let's not tell them that. But that's literally where it started. That's where my whole coaching business actually began, was there, and it kind of spread through word of mouth from that point on. But that's what it is. Like, people are like, Jason, what does it mean to be high status? What is that? And it does it apply outside the bar? And the answer is absolutely yes. What I found later on and what I do now is that those same behaviors that allowed guys to be successful in this really competitive environment in a club or a bar are the same behaviors that allow not just men, but also women to succeed in the boardroom, at the coffee shop, at home, in the office, everywhere. So what does it mean to be high status? It's three things. That's it. It's to look successful, sound successful, and act successful. Like, I always tell everyone, like, listen, in order to be successful, you have to look successful, you have to sound successful, and you have to act successful. And it's so much more important than saying the right thing or thinking the right thoughts, because that to me is just small fries. It's small shit. The big shit is those big three: sound successful, look successful, act successful.
Hey man, I got a couple quick reminders I want to share with you. First, the Elite Man podcast is available on all podcasting channels, including iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and directly on the EliteManMagazine.com website. You can subscribe to any or all of these channels to get every episode as soon as they're available, and I highly recommend you do so. Also, our show notes are always up on the EliteManMagazine.com website for you to check out more info on every podcast we have. This includes the summary of each episode, any links for products, recommendations, or resources we mention, and further info on that episode. And finally, if you're not on our Elite Man newsletter yet, join today at EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter. You'll get all of our podcast episodes, articles, videos, and special content not seen or heard on the site or show. Join the newsletter now, EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter.
I love, too, how you said you studied some of the guys around you who had this kind of stuff. Going back to my big kind of breakthrough in dating and really getting understanding game and women was I started hanging around this guy who was just a natural. Like, he was a bona fide pimp, ladies man. Everywhere we went, when I started hanging around this guy, women just kind of were immediately attracted to him. They swarmed him almost like he was some kind of celebrity. And it wasn't like, you know, he was this great, huge guy, a great looking 6'4" jacked guy. Or, I mean, he was like 5'7", fairly good looking guy, but, you know, nothing special. Wasn't anything, you know, he didn't have a ton of money. He just had this charisma about him. He just had this way of carrying himself. Like you said, he looked successful. He sounded successful. He acted successful. He had this confidence in himself that everywhere he went, he was going to be successful in what he did. And people just, you know, loved that. They just took to that, women especially. And I think that, again, like you said, doesn't just translate to going out to the bar, the nightclub, picking up chicks. It also translates to, you know, the business world, being a leader, giving a speech, making a presentation, a negotiation, all that stuff. So I really love what you have to say about that and kind of how it connects with a lot of the topics we've mentioned in the past. But Jason, how does someone start to perfect that concept of looking successful, sounding successful, acting successful if they don't have someone around them? If they don't have this guy like the natural I used to hang out with, this guy named Bobby, that was his name, that I hung out with, or someone, you know, the people that you learned from personally, how can you start to perfect this kind of high status attitude and presentation of yourself?
Well, to me, anytime you have to tackle a problem, especially when you don't have a role model or a model who is immediately available to you on a regular basis, like you had with your mentor or with your friend Bobby, is when you got to break it down into a science and a system. So it becomes something that you can manage, you can understand, and you can kind of play with, and you kind of have a game plan. Like when I was playing basketball and it's time for the summer and I got 3 months to work on my skills, I remember there were all these kids who would just go to the gym every day just to fuck around and shoot some shots and do a little bit of ball handling drills. And like that was it. And by the end of the summer, they barely improved. But on the flip, when I started the summer, I never just went to the gym. I had an exact series. Here are the drills I'm going to do. Here are the exercises I'm going to do. Here's how I'm going to progress. Here's how I'm going to know I'm progressing. Here's what I expect to be by the end of the summer. And every summer I would come back to school in late August and everyone at school would be like, dude, how did you get so much better? And to me, it was so obvious, right? You have that system and you work the system and that's it. So what I've done with status is, you know, you asked like, how does someone start? How do they work on it? Is, well, there's 12 signals, right? We call them 12 honest signals of higher status through right now because, you know, that would take a long time. They can get my book if anyone's listening. The book is free for all your listeners. So they just go to the website you mentioned and they can get that. But what I can tell you is that when you know all 12, you can pinpoint. Here's the thing. Every single person listening here is already high status or is already good at some of these signals. They're just lacking in others, and it's those ones specifically that are holding them back from getting the results they want, whether it be in social life, in business life, with their relationships, with their connections, with their money, with everything, right? So you just have to zero in on, it's almost like you have to self-diagnose, here's what I'm missing, and then, you know, go to work on it, right? So I'll give you a good example. I had a client who did a lot of phone sales, okay? So, and it's like he used to do in-person sales, now he does phone sales, and he's a high level phone sales guy. You know, he's making $200,000 or $300,000 a year in commissions, like a really successful guy. But he had this thing where when he was selling to people he perceived as high status individuals, like, you know, doctors or lawyers or kind of higher level position people, his vocal tonality would just fall apart. Right. He talks to someone who he doesn't perceive as being high status on the phone, and he sounds certain, and there's conviction, and there's authority in his voice. And he's, you know, there's over 30 different tonality patterns that humans can use to persuade and influence and connect. And he would use all of them in the right ways when he's talking to a random person. But the minute you put, you know, a brain surgeon on the phone and he's selling the guy something, his tonality would fall apart. And he'd go into this uncertain tonality, this weak tonality, this kind of like this tonality that the other person on the other end, like we know that the studies show the other person is barely hearing the content of what you're saying. They're mostly hearing and feeling in response to how you sound. And he just didn't sound convincing. He didn't sound certain. And once I heard that, I heard, you know, him on the phone, it was like, that's it. This is very obvious. This isn't going to take a lot of work. This is just one thing, right? One of the 12 signals is high status vocal tonality. So we went to work for a couple of days. I just gave him some drills and some exercises to work on his vocal tonality, especially in those situations. And by the end of the week, he was closing those deals with the higher level people like it was nothing. And that's just an example of, like, you know, like I said, you know, some of the high status signals are eye contact and vocal tonality and body language and your walks. Like those are four of the 12, for example. We have been practicing those every single day since the day we were born. Right. So you are, anyone listening, you are already practicing some of these signals, but you just might be sending out, a low status eye contact signal instead of a high status one. You might be sending out a low status body language signal instead of a high status one. So it's not like you have to go to work on all 12 because that would take forever. It's like, let's just pinpoint and diagnose which ones specifically are holding you back from the results that you want. And we can just, you know, we can ante up those, we can double down on those, and we can raise those up in a couple of days. And with that one shift, everything can begin to change in your life, again, from social to business and everywhere else.
Yeah. What's a quick tip for improving your vocal tonality like right now?
Sure. So one thing that you can do to improve your vocal tonality is this is an exercise that acting coaches in Hollywood would give to actors. And it basically you purse your lips together and you just go like, I'll demonstrate here. You just go, and you want to do that for as long as you can. And you'll know you're doing it right if your lips or your cheeks are kind of vibrating as you do it. And you want to be projecting the volume out as far as you can. You want to be pushing the air out as you do it. And once you get, you kind of are able to do that for maybe 30 seconds straight, you want to switch it where as you're doing that noise, you want to go up kind of more nasally. So you work on that high pitch and then you want to bring it back down to that middle pitch for maybe 10 seconds. And then you want to bring it down from your diaphragm where it's kind of deeper for maybe 10 seconds. And what we want to do is just get you accustomed to speaking at these different levels of vocal tonality. So it's like, and that's the middle one. And then we go up and it's, it's kind of higher, right? And then if I want to go down, it's right. You kind of reach down into that diaphragm and you get a deeper resonance. And all that's doing is just training those muscles specifically in that range, right? And once you can move across different ranges and you can go deep when you need to and you can go higher when you need to, all of a sudden you start signaling a different level of confidence and different level of certainty to people. And again, that's what they're going to respond to. The other thing you can do, so I'll give you another tip here, is being articulate is a huge advantage over those who are just kind of normal speakers or average speakers. Like we all know someone, we met someone who's just incredibly articulate. They seem to have this never ending bag of incredible words and their ability to project them and speak them so clearly. It's mesmerizing to a lot of people. So if you can work on your articulation of words and your presentation, because, you know, really, like if I were to ask you, like, how many days of the week do you use your voice? Like the answer is 7, right? So you're speaking every single day. If every time you speak 7 days a week, you can be super articulate and have that high status vocal tonality, everyone responds to you differently. It is a life-changing event. And one of the most basic, fundamental, fastest ways to improve your articulation is just practicing tongue twisters, which is fun as hell also, right? And like, you know, I do them every morning. I've done them for years. I have my clients do them. I literally have millionaire CEOs and famous plastic surgeons and all kinds of clients that I have literally waking up. And as part of their morning ritual, I have them looking in the mirror and doing funny tongue twisters. Like I thought a thought, but the thought I thought wasn't the thought I thought I thought. If the thought I thought I thought had been the thought I thought I thought, I wouldn't have thought so much. Like that is a tongue twister, right? And if you can get good at those, the way you speak and the way you present and the way people respond to that is life-changing, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that, man, for sure. And I kind of sort of vaguely remember the voice thing, like the humming sounds and all that, you know, stuff from the acting class I took, because the teacher of the acting class was a former actor herself. And, you know, she used to have and we did a lot of improv too in that class, which is another thing that'll push you way out of your comfort zone, but also have you doing like a lot of cool shit, like, you know, expressing yourself in strange ways that you don't ordinarily do, or maybe, you know, pushing the diaphragm and the way you express yourself vocally and just hitting like those different kind of tones and levels of your voice that you don't ordinarily hit, which is a good practice, I think, that anyone should kind of go through.
Absolutely. Anyone who uses their voice, like it's not like one of those things that you do once a month. Like we are using our voice like every single day. Like that's how podcasts happen, right? Like if it was something you do 5 times a year, I could understand you not really working on it or just kind of pushing it to the wayside. But if it's something you do every day, how are you not going to focus on that? How are you not going to build that skill up? And for anyone listening right now, Justin, I'm just going to throw this in. Like, if you're one of those people and you're like, well, Jason, you know, I'm not like you or Justin. I don't have a really good natural voice. I'm just, that's not one of my strengths. I have news for you. So, you know, obviously you probably know who Clark Gable is, right? Obviously he uttered that famous sentence in Gone with the Wind, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Like, it's one of those famous lines in Hollywood. Well, when Clark Gable first started acting, in his 20s in Hollywood, he got rejected for role after role after role. For several years, he couldn't get any work. He almost quit acting. And the reason was everyone thought he had a shitty voice. They thought it was too high pitched. It wasn't articulate. It wasn't, like, literally good looking guy. He's got everything else down. He's got the charisma, but his voice is just, it's shitty. Sorry, Clark, don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, get out of here. And he found a coach who actually took him aside for a month, and they just completely revolutionized and transformed his voice. And he went back to castings, and all of a sudden he started getting job after job after job after job. So much so eventually, you know, he was known as like the king of Hollywood. So just because you're not starting with a good voice doesn't mean shit. You can certainly bring it up. You can certainly train it, and you can, you know, I'm not saying that you can expect to become the king of Hollywood by working on it, but you can certainly expect bigger, better results in your life as a result of it.
No, totally agree, dude. I love that. Jason, just a few more questions, man, then we're going to kind of wrap things up. But rapport is one that I wanted to bring up, and I know that you're kind of a big proponent of building rapport. How do you build rapport? Obviously, it's something huge. You know, you're making connections, whether that's business or socially. I don't even know. Is it one of the high status triggers that you have?
Actually, we call it high status rapport control. It is definitely.
Cool. So this is right up your alley, man. Rapport. So how do you build rapport quickly in, you know, genuinely without, you know, spending years or months on end with someone if you're trying to like connect with somebody? Do you have any kind of tips on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, cause there's two big things or two, I guess, big misconceptions related to rapport that most people have. And if you're in sales, you've read sales books or you've studied NLP, or any of that stuff, you've probably seen or maybe even been spoon fed some of these misconceptions. And they can really limit your ability to build rapport, whether it's with a client, with someone of the opposite sex, with a family member or a friend, whoever it is. And the first one is that a lot of people think rapport is just like finding commonalities. Right. Like the proverbial sales guy, he goes into the CEO's office. He sees there's a 3-foot fish on the guy's wall. So he goes, that's it. I'm going to talk to him about fishing. We're going to be best friends. And then he's going to buy my shit. Right. That's like what people think. Mm-hmm. And you go in there and you talk to the guy about fishing. You share fishing stories for half an hour and then you go for the sale. And he's like, yeah, I'm not interested, but let's definitely go fishing sometime. Right. Like you don't build rapport through commonalities. That's not what rapport is. Rapport is simply, if you want the simplest definition, it's simply a relationship of responsiveness. Like that is all it is. For instance, if you end up in the unfortunate situation, if you're in a dark alley and someone comes up to you and they point a gun at your head and they say, walk with me, you are in rapport with that person. You have nothing in common, but you will respond to them. You will do what they say, because it's a relationship of responsiveness at this point due to this gun being pointed at you, right? So that's what rapport is, right? When you can be in rapport with someone, then they're going to positively respond to you, whether you're closing a sale, whether you're trying to win them over to your way of thinking, whether you want a date with them, whether you want a job with them. That's what it is. That's why it's so important. And the way that we can do it, because like you mentioned, Justin, you know, a lot of times you don't have 6 months or a year or forever to build rapport with someone. You might have 3 minutes waiting, you know, at an airport before you guys board a flight because you met someone next to you who may, you know, have a valuable connection for you. You might only have 2 or 3 minutes in that situation to actually establish a relationship of responsiveness with that person. And there are certainly all kinds of things that you can do to accelerate that rapport building. I'm going to give a couple right now. Actually, there's over 11 like scientifically proven ways to do this. I share all of them in the book, but one of them is actually called the Ben Franklin trick. And it kind of flies in the face of what most people would assume is the way you build rapport. A lot of people would assume, well, you know, if I kiss up to someone, but if I'm very agreeable with someone and maybe I do them a couple favors, then that's probably going to win. You know, I'm going to win their favor. I'm going to be preferred by them. They're going to be cool with me. We're going to be in rapport, right? But that's actually not the truth, and science actually backs this up. So Benjamin Franklin, father of America, right? The first self-made millionaire in the world also. He's just one of my favorite people in the world. His biography by Walter Isaacson, I think, is probably the best biography I've ever read still to this point. But he had this thing where when he was a delegate in Philadelphia, his seat was kind of up for grabs. And he had to be reelected in this whole thing. And he had never really had someone trying to take his spot, but he did at this point. It was this younger guy from across town, and they didn't really like each other because they're both going for the same spot. And Ben is sitting there like, you know, how do I win this person's favor so I can talk them into not running against me and instead maybe put them in somewhere else? So instead of trying to win this person's favor, he flipped it around and he had that person do him a favor. So here's what he did. He had heard that this guy had this immaculate, amazing book collection. He was a huge bibliophile, which Ben was also. So knowing that, and knowing that this guy had one particular book that was like super rare, no one could find, and obviously super valuable and super significant to this other guy, Ben wrote him a letter and was like, yo, dude, you have an awesome book collection. I've heard all about it. In fact, I heard you had this one book that I've been looking for. I can't find it. Would you mind sending it my way so I could read it? I will return it on this date, you know, 6 weeks from now. Thank you so much. So the guy gets the letter and he's like, screw it, I'll send him the book. So he sends Ben the book. Ben gets the book, puts it on his desk, walks away, and then 6 weeks later comes back to the book, hasn't opened it, hasn't touched it, hasn't done anything, puts it back in an envelope or a bag, whatever they used to mail back then, I don't know. And he ships the guy his book right back, right, exactly on the day that he said he would. He didn't read it. He didn't do anything. The next time they see each other at a meeting in Philadelphia, this guy who previously would look at Ben, would talk to Ben, even talk shit about him behind his back, this guy walks up to Ben, is so excited to see him. Benjamin Franklin, how are you? Missed you. Great to see you. Please, I saved you a seat. Sit down next to me. And everything had changed. Ben hadn't talked to him. Ben hadn't given him a gift. He hadn't talked about how much they both loved fishing. He hadn't done any of that shit. All he did was get the other guy to do him a favor. And everything changed. And the reason for this is we as humans, whenever we carry out an action of any kind, we have to, our brain will immediately always rationalize the action right after. We always, you know, the strongest human force is to be consistent with our own self-image. So if Justin, like, if I do you a favor, like sending you a really important book to me, I have to immediately rationalize that action immediately after. Otherwise, I'm going to be cognitively dissonant and cause all kinds of problems. So in order to rationalize it, there's only one real rationalization that really fits here, that really works, which is if I'm doing Justin this great favor, I must really like Justin. And it's that same logic that Ben used in his own favor to turn this adversary into an ally.
Wow, that's incredible, man. I wonder. And Ben Franklin, as you mentioned, is just one of the, you know, history's smartest, most kind of genius individuals. I put him up there with like Da Vinci and all those other guys, Tesla. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I have to check that biography out. But I wonder how he knew 200 and whatever 50 years ago that this counterintuitive psychology trick would even work. Like, where did he get this from? I wonder. Right.
Right. Well, you know, dude, Benjamin Franklin was like, he did something that everyone should be doing today, but no one does. And if they did it, their whole life would be better. And it's simply just sitting quietly somewhere and just shutting the fuck up and just reflecting and just thinking about what happened today and what surprised me and how did people respond. And, you know, I noticed that those two people, that like they had a connection there, which is so counterintuitive. What forces were at play that made that happen? And by him being a student of human nature doing this on almost daily basis, my guess is that he just picked up these little things that are always screaming at us. They're staring at us. They're going on all around us. But because we're so caught up in how many Instagram likes our last post got, or, you know, what nipple the Kardashian just showed on Facebook or whatever, like we focus on the things that don't matter in lieu of the things that do. And Ben, you know, Ben didn't have to fight off the temptation to check his Snapchat or whatever. But, you know, even back then, no one was doing this shit, but he was doing it all the time.
Yeah. I always think of like what would happen if one of these guys were alive today, how much would the world be improved, or, you know, just kind of like so many years ahead with all the technology and stuff we have. Dude, I love that tip though. I like that one so much. Is there another rapport tip you have, like a quick little one you can go over?
Yeah, I'll do one of a quick one right here. So researchers and scientists have for years known about something called the mirror exposure effect. And all this really means is that when we are consistently and repeatedly exposed to the same thing, especially in a short period of time, our brains just naturally it becomes more comfortable with it. And with that comfort comes preference. We actually start to like and prefer and favor this thing over everything else just because our brain has seen it a few times or a bunch of times. Just the mere exposure changes our whole relationship with it. So how does this play out in real life? Like, I'll share a really quick study that I find so fascinating about this, which is they took a group of people and they showed them two images. The first image that they showed them was a picture of themselves. Okay. The second image, picture of themselves, but reversed, like a reverse image of themselves. And they asked each person in this study, which of these two images do you prefer? And more than 95% of the people in the study, they didn't choose the image of themselves. They chose the reverse image. They actually liked the reverse image significantly more than their actual image. Why is that? What's going on? Well, that's the image that they see every day in the mirror. So mirror exposure is, you know, and mirror exposure is M-E-R-D, not like mirror, like I'm looking in the mirror. It just so happens that was related. But simply because they see themselves, that reverse image, every day, and they've seen it every day for years since they were born, that is the image of themselves that they prefer. So simply because that's the one they see, that's the one they like, and that a lot of them were like the image that they saw of themselves, the actual image, they were like, I don't look like that. There's something off about that picture. It's like when we hear some people, when they hear a video of themselves or on an iPhone, they're like, I don't sound like that. That's not me, right? And it's the same kind of thing. So what are some ways that you can use this in your own life? Well, obviously, this doesn't lend itself as well to you having 2 minutes with somebody, but you know, there's lots of ways that this can be used. Like car salesmen for years, they have this trick where when they come out to greet you, they say hello, and then before you can even start talking, they're like, you know what, I'll be right back. I got to go into the office, talk to my manager. I'll be back in 30 seconds. So they leave. They don't talk to a manager. They're not doing anything important. They're just sitting there looking at their watch, drinking coffee. And then a minute later, they come back and they talk to you. And they do this because they figured out that if you've seen them twice instead of once, you're more likely to buy a car from them. That's them using the mirror exposure effect. The other way is if you are trying to maintain a relationship or even build a relationship, whether it's love or platonic, with someone who lives across the country or a different part of the planet, just putting in regular FaceTime with them is going to be really helpful in terms of maintaining that connection and that rapport and that relationship. If they can just see your name or your picture on their phone on a regular basis, whether it's a text message, a Facebook message, a DM on Instagram, just staying in touch and putting in that FaceTime every so often is going to have a huge effect on maintaining that rapport. And when you see that person the next time you see them, and if you're an online marketer, if you have a website or anything like that, this is why, like, for instance, I was on a boat for a photo shoot yesterday, which is totally random. But one of the photographers there, he's this guy who goes around the world, and he's been a photographer for a lot of big EDM artists like Tiesto and Skrillex and people like that. And in that world, when they post their pictures to Instagram, a lot of them, they don't want to post more than like one day a week because they're so concerned about how many likes each picture gets. And if it doesn't get enough likes, then they got to take the picture down or whatever. And I was explaining to him, I was like, you know, that's the wrong way of looking at it. Like, look at DJ Khaled, for instance. How many times a day does that guy post on Instagram? And if you don't follow him or you don't know, I don't know the number. I would guess it's like a million. Okay. This guy posts every 5 minutes on all social media channels, but he's smart because he's taking advantage of the mirror exposure effect. On your feed, it's like 90% other people, 10% Khaled. And because of that, he's always fresh in your mind. You're always being exposed to him. And that's why so many people, like, it's one of the reasons why so many people are just like, I don't know what it is about this guy. He literally has no talent. He doesn't rap. He doesn't DJ. He doesn't produce. I don't know what the fuck he does, but I kind of like him. I kind of like that guy. And I guarantee you that the mere exposure effect has something to do with that.
Yeah. It just kind of are also like retargeting ads like on Facebook or Google after you check out something on, say, Amazon. You know, you see it 3, 4, 5 more times and you're going to buy it. It's kind of the exact same principle there.
That's exactly right. Like in direct marketing, they always talk about how the average customer needs to see your offer 7 times before they feel comfortable purchasing it. And it's the same thing as remarketing, just like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Love it, man. Jason, wrapping things up, what's the sort of number one action step you want to leave our Elite Man audience with to take right now to kind of become this high status individual we're talking about here?
So I guess if there's one thing that I could leave, there's so many, man. I feel like we could talk for hours on status and all this stuff. You know, it's just that, like, I look around and so many people today are just so comfortable with average and being normal and being, you know, kind of mundane and routine and predictable. And I can tell you that will not get you the love or the girl or the guy that you want, if your girl listening to this, it will not get you the freedom you want. It won't put you in a first class seat or on a private jet at any point. It won't show you, it won't take you to the canals of Venice or the jungles in Bali. It won't take you anywhere. You will get through your entire life. You'll look back on it and you'll be like, why the hell didn't I take more chances? Why the hell didn't I take more risks? I was so obsessed with things that didn't matter. One of my mentors is Dan Pena. He's a billionaire, crazy old man. He's an amazing person, but crazy old man. And he's always like, Jason, don't focus. Don't put any attention. Don't focus at all on things that don't matter. Focus on the few, not the many. And I really try and make that this like guiding principle in my life. So like, if I had to make like one plea for everyone listening from like a success standpoint, a high status standpoint, a like getting and living the life of your dreams, the life you were meant to standpoint, it's that become high status. Like, recognize that in life, if you're going to get the life you want, if you're going to do the things you want, if you're going to attract the people you want, you must become high status first. And then all of a sudden, the doors of your destiny, the doors that you want, they swing wide open, and they're just like, they're like sirens, like they call to you. Just everything opens up, everything becomes so easy. Like the average American, I literally just read the other day that they spend 4.7 hours per day, not watching TV, but 4.7 hours per day on their phone. Okay. You want to talk about people who are focusing on things that don't matter? It's 99%. So my final thing is don't become like part of that percentage. Like, don't become another statistic lost in the sea of forgotten faces. Don't give into a life of watching other people, do while you just wonder like why you're not or why you didn't. Like, don't bet on lottery shit. Bet on yourself. Choose to become high status. Choose to be one of the rare 1% people who leads his own life, does things his own way, and gets the life that he wants. Not just for you, but because of the example and model that you can set for whether it's your girlfriend or your wife or your kids or your brothers or your friends or your family, anyone. Do it for them and do it for you. Like, that's my whole thing. Like, you can buy my book. That's cool. You don't have to. I really don't care. We have, we're doing great. Put it that way. My thing is just live the life that you know you're meant to. Please don't settle for what parents or teachers or society told you to settle for, because we have more than enough people on this planet settling. And I would love to see more people who are fucking doing instead.
Love it, dude. Yeah. And, 2017, 2018 going forward, we're in sort of the disruptor generation. So there really is no excuse with all the technology and, all the resources we have at our disposal to you to make a difference and to lead the life that you're supposed to live or that you want to live. Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it. Before we go, where is the website again that you want to send our listeners to check out that book you just came out with, High Status?
Cool. So it's highstatusbook.com. I just bought, actually, 2 days ago, about 1,000 copies of the book to give away for free. So as long as they get this in time, hopefully we'll still have a few copies left. I just saw, actually, Roy Jones Jr., former heavyweight champion of the world, was like posting and telling all his fans and people to go buy the book. So I don't know if there's going to be any left after that. But if there are, go to highstatusbook.com. The book is free. I just want to get in your hands so we can start working with you and changing your life as well.
All right, dude. Appreciate it, man. Guys, it's highstatusbook.com. Jason, again, thanks for coming on the show, brother. It's great to connect, and I hope to talk to you soon, man.
Absolutely, Justin. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.